This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Welcome back to This Just In. We're going to talk about stuff, namely Dane Cook, cats, and possibly another hidden topic that Chris doesn't even know about that I've been saving in my brain to extend time if we come under 30 minutes.
Well, we also have you have to finish up your Guitar Hero.
Oh, shit. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Then Guitar Hero will be the third topic, and my hidden topic will remain hidden. So, I wanted to begin the podcast. The comedian Dane Cook, who's like a pop culture sensation right now, he just came out with an HBO special called Vicious Circle. It's on demand and on a pretty good rotation on HBO if you want to catch it. I mean, my opinion on Dane Cook is he's a cool comedian. He's got a cool gimmick, and namely that gimmick being he makes a lot of like 80s references. He's got a good energy for comedians, sort of a different energy than most comedians, sort of, you know, like a physical but not physical comic. You know, and he has great wording, and I've generally liked his bits. And I was watching this Vicious Circle, which it's god awful at the beginning. It's one of the first maybe three bits of this special are horrible. They're like anecdotal story bits where he tells stories. The problem is there's no jokes in them, and the jokes are so few and far between. It's not very funny. And one entire premise of one of his bits was about crying and how when you cry really hard and like you're thinking about crying all day and you can't just wait to get home and cry. And both me and my girlfriend watching this were like, this has never happened to us. And there's nothing worse. There's no worse poison for a comedy bit than the audience thinking like, what? I can't relate to this.
Yeah.
And that's what this bit is. And okay, but there was one bit that infuriated me, like no comedy bit has before, and that's because sort of the ideology behind this bit is so horrible and flawed, and it comes through. And you know, when a comedian's on stage, like they sort of have this power of the audience, where like whatever the comedian says is law. And as he's describing this bit that is so flawed in its logic and reason, you know, and the crowd seems totally behind him. It just, there was something about it that just bothered me so much, especially because the politics of this bit goes against the politics of comedy. You know, comedy, as it's been known, like, you know, starting with the whole Lenny Bruce thing and moving throughout, you know, sort of George Carlin, Bill Hicks, Sam Kinison, and those types of people. It's always been sort of, comedy's always, at least good comedy's always been subversive in some way. And this comedy is so anti-subversive. It's unbelievable. So here, I'm going to play the bit for you.
And let's all note, I've not heard this. I don't even know, I didn't even know there was a new thing out on this. So, you know, really quickly, my impression of Dane Cook up until now was I liked him. He's all right, you know. Sometimes I think his bits are very self-serving, where he's just trying to get some poon after the show. and whatever, that's fine. It's total to him. He probably succeeds at that. But his last album, or the two albums, or whatever that double disc set was, I liked it. I thought it was really funny. I used to listen to it quite often. So
yeah.
I'm a clean slate here for this. I might end up liking it. Who knows?
Yeah. So I'm gonna play the bit. It's like 2 minutes and 12 seconds long. And then we'll discuss the bit afterwards, what my issues were with it and whatnot. All right, here we go.
A sneeze started this entire situation off, okay? I'm standing next to this guy. He turns towards me, and he sneezes like this. He goes, I looked at him, and I went, God bless you. Yeah, I said it like that. God bless you. which, you know, is God bless you, but it kind of sounded like, cover your fucking mouth. Guy looks at me, and very condescending, he goes, yeah, I'm an atheist. I'm trying to be polite. I don't know you're an atheist, right? And even if I did, what am I supposed to say when an atheist sneezes? When you die, nothing happens. He goes, well, what about you? What did you grow up? I said, well, I was raised Catholic. What do you believe happens to you after you die? And I said, okay, well, hopefully I live a good life, and my soul goes to heaven. He's giggling. He's like, you believe this? This is what... So he's laughing at my beliefs, and finally I just snap back, what about you? Okay, what about you? All right? What happens to you after you die? Now he gets very serious, like he's going to school me, okay? I know what's going to happen to me after I die. After I pass on, my body will become one with this earth. And with that, I will return as a huge, beautiful tree. I hope when he dies, he does become a tree. And wouldn't it be fantastic if while he was out there just enjoying his treeness, through the woods, a huge, sweaty guy with an axe comes along. Sees him. Chops him down. Smash. Put a chain around him. Drag him through the mud and the muck. Throw him into a sawmill. Grind him up. Then you pound him down into paper. And once he's paper, you print the Bible on him.
All right, so that's the bit. And obviously, I'm a bit biased for this because I am an atheist. But it's not even so much the atheist versus Catholic thing of it. It's the... First of all, it's the glaring, like, packaging and selling of Christianity to a mainly Catholic audience in Boston, which just disgusts me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, because he's playing to the crowd. That's what he's doing.
I agree. There's a moment where he was really pulling at strings, and I wish I would have written it down, but he was kind of like... I mean, you could just tell, like, he was really pandering towards them, and, you know, like, that logic where he's like, well, what was I supposed to say? I didn't know you were an atheist.
Yeah.
You know, you can say Gesundheit, and that has nothing to do with anything, and it accomplishes the same thing.
Well,
you know?
He's missing...
Where this argument is going to...
I mean, he's taking moments that are generative, like interesting moments like that where you have a confrontation between a religious person and a non-religious person in saying the phrase, God bless you, but he's not examining it from the more intelligent angle. The fact that people go around saying God bless you and stuff and sort of exporting the dominance of religion versus non-religion. I mean, the crazy fact about saying God bless you all the time is... The fact that the atheist is right in bringing up, hey, I don't believe in God. So, you know, that phrase doesn't work for me. And
Right. There's
a more interesting commentary there that a more adept comedian might take, wherein people are constantly pushing religion in the weirdest of ways. And that's one of them.
I think, you know, with this particular bit, it didn't even seem like him. Based on what I've heard before, there was something like very not clever about it.
Yeah, there was anger.
Fallen into a rut. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. It was way more anger, and it was less of some sort of a criticism of somebody. It was more just like saying, "Hey, fuck you" to an atheist guy, and that was really a shit packaging job of how atheists are. He was basically making us into, while he was describing him, the atheist, it reminded me of that episode of The Office where the computer guy comes in, and he's like very pompous and standoffish, and it's like, not all of us are like that, and yeah, during the course of my day, people will say God bless you, and the thought always crosses my mind when they say it. I just don't outwardly say, well, please don't say that, I don't believe, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, whatever, you just say your thing, and... Fine, I get what your point is, but you're right. It's a subtle way of packaging the dominance of a religion over people who aren't religious, and his methodology. I question it, and it's really upsetting to hear that audience when he said, like, the hush come over the audience, and then the afterwards when he says the guy said he was an atheist, and
yeah.
Everyone's like, oh my god, you know, like. That was such a horrible thing. But then he turned the guy into a monstrous type person. Therefore, the audience was on his side, and I'm sure they were in the first place.
It's just depressing that the comedy stage you know, in the past, a lot of the time has been a place of, like, sort of progressive political discussion. And here we've got the most regressive discussion about religion I can imagine, where it's, like, not questioning, you know, the dominance of religion or, all, and, you know, sort of demeaning somebody for having an alternate viewpoint and calling attention to that alternate viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the other part of the logic that I just found so ridiculous was that, you know, he goes into that whole thing about what's going to happen to you when you die, you know, and how Dane Cook thinks he's going to go to some mythical heaven, you know, and prance around with deer and his family and whatnot. And this guy says that he thinks he's going to go into the ground and sort of, you know, be recycled as nature, which, by the way, is true. Regardless of what you believe in, your body's always going to decay and, you know, sort of be returned to the earth. And he presents it like that guy's idea, that guy's true, scientifically proven idea is more wacky than his, that he's going to float up to heaven.
Well, that guy's idea wasn't wacky in the least. He was stating a fact. When, you know, if you die and your body decomposes, you contribute to the environment.
Yeah.
The guy wasn't stating anything that was just pompous and like, fuck you, religion. He was saying, well, Dane made him into that, but yeah. I guarantee you, if it was an honest, intelligent atheist, and he did happen to, you know, make that... I mean, I don't know very many atheists who look for that argument on such a trivial thing, but if this atheist was, you know, immature enough to do that, you know, I think Dane Cook characterized this fake person, and whether or not this person never existed in reality and Dane was just figuring it out on his own and making shit up and then coming up with a bit, because to me it sounded like he was pressed for time and really needed a bit real quick, and he kind of just threw
that's
it together.
That's what this whole special is. If you watch this special, he's got killer material at the end, which is reworked material from his old bits, but he sort of improves it. But the beginning, I think, is pretty much all new material, and it's so weak. Yeah. And it's obvious that HBO probably approached him and said, you're hot right now, we want to do a special. And he had to come up with something real fast.
Yeah, and it just goes to show you, too, there, on one hand, you know what, I'm gonna say right now, I'm kind of tired of comedians who all right, like George Carlin was able to do it, and you had mentioned Bill Hicks and all these people, but you know, as of late, I've been really and almost evaluating more of the comedy of Mitch Hedberg, which is probably, I think, arguably one of the greatest comedians, if not the best comedian of all time, and that's simply because he doesn't make his comedy inaccessible to anyone. Everyone can access his brand of comedy. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said about that, because even guys, yeah, I like David Cross or I like George Carlin, but there is a level of, like, you know, there's some people who just won't get it or they don't want to get it, and so in one sense, like, that comedian is not fulfilling their goal of, you know, you want to make people laugh, maybe you want to be socially relevant in some way too, and that's fine, don't get me wrong, it's great if people are successful at it, but I think, like, you know, Dane Cook isn't really in that same category as a David Cross or George Carlin. He's a different brand of comedy, or at least he started off as one. And now he's, if this is what he's trying to do, if he's trying to add some sort of relevance to it, rather than talk about his experience in a supermarket, you know, make it silly and about, you know, dating or whatever his thing was before. You know, if he's trying to do that, he's not really going to bite into this market. But my point originally, sorry, I just deviated there. My point originally was people like Mitch Hedberg are geniuses for what they do, and it didn't take them putting down anybody to do it. You know,
well, you know, it's interesting you say that because, okay, Mitch Hedberg was brilliant because he did access a wide audience, but didn't do it through any, like, ideological means.
Yeah.
Whereas Dane Cook is obviously trying to access a wide audience, tap into that Christian base, mm-hmm. by, you know, flaunting material like this, which, in my opinion, is incredibly regressive material. Regardless, yeah. if you're an atheist, a Christian, or whatnot, the discussion he had on stage was a ridiculous, ludicrous discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from either side it was. I mean, it didn't portray either side well.
I'm trying to go through my head of, like, other talk about how they're Jewish or they're Christian even, or whatever, and a lot of times they're poking fun at their own faith.
Yeah, yeah, but he's not doing that.
Not at all. See, that's the difference, exactly. These other people, they'll poke fun at their own faith, and then that way, it makes it so even for me. It's like, yeah, one time, that's what I was taught. I know what's going on with that. That makes sense. Haha, yeah. It's funny. But what he just did there was completely ostracized me while trying to pander to a certain base. You know, just, it really was... Even if I wasn't an atheist, it wasn't funny. I mean, it was really contrived.
That's how this whole special is. You should probably watch it just to see how bad some of the bits are at the beginning. I mean, I was sitting there just, like, struggling to find any part to laugh at. And then at the end, I was dying laughing. And it was such an odd special, because usually they front-load their funniest material at the front. And then they save something at the end that's sort of a quick, like, explosion of laughter. And then in the middle, you've got your hit and miss. But this, it was all miss and then explosion. It was nuts. All right, well, I guess we can move on.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, in Mitch Hedberg's credit, even his misses are always hits.
Yeah, that's what was amazing about him is he could have horrible jokes and... just his personality and his delivery, he could make it funny. He could pull anything out of the gutter.
Yeah.
And he was just the best. And anyone who hasn't listened to him needs to listen to him. And, you know, another reason that he was great was the stage was almost a place of experimentation for him, where when you listened to him or saw him, it felt like you were seeing something fresh and new that was getting tried out every time. Like, he was trying things every time he was up on stage.
Yeah. Exactly. So, anyway, listen to Mitch Hedberg, because I know I still quote him to this day. I don't think I'll ever stop quoting him. He's like the comedian version of the hit film Bottle Rocket for me.
Yeah.
The other day, I was walking up to my girlfriend's apartment, and I started to walk up the steps, and I saw this cat walking towards me, maybe a half block away, and just in jest, because it was an animal, and it doesn't matter what the animal is. If it's furry, I'll usually call it using my signature signal. if the animal responds, cool, you know, the animal is able to read my or listen to my language, so that's cool. I go up on the stoop where just, you know, at the front door, my girlfriend has to buzz me in, and this cat actually comes up, follows me up, and just starts nuzzling me, just loving me, purring so loud and everything, and my girlfriend's roommate actually answered the door, and she answers into that, and I go, yeah, it's a cat, and she tells me, I woke up this morning, and I told myself, I'm going to find a cat today, and now there's a cat up here. So we're like, okay, well, let's bring it in. Let's just, you know, it's so nice and everything. So we bring it upstairs. My girlfriend was in the shower. She comes out. She sees the cat, and she said, yeah, that cat's really friendly. I saw it this morning, too, and it was very friendly towards me. So we start petting the thing. We feed it some tuna. Fast forward, like, 7 hours later, my girlfriend and I are blasted drunk, right? We come home. we walked from this little thing called Daly in the Alley. We came home. Actually, we weren't drunk. I lied. We were somewhat drunk. I was able to drive, and I don't drive drunk. So, but we were doing fine. And we were gonna make some tacos really quickly. My girlfriend opens up her back door. Now, her building is set up where, when we were in the front door, no cat could have the knowledge of where we wouldn't have known. It's not that smart. Based on, you know, the architecture of the front of the building, and then the back of the building, there's like a wood structure that leads upstairs, you know, and it kind of has little decks for everyone. And she opens up that back door, and all of a sudden we hear, meow, meow. And this fucking cat is out there, like, knew exactly where we lived, is hanging out at our back door. And so, you know, we feel bad for it. We go outside, we pet it a little bit, and, you know, we realize this cat needs somewhere to go, and we're not willing to give it a home for ourselves, so we're going to take it to the Humane Society. We leave it out there for a little bit of time, and we say, okay, if it's not out there then, no big deal. You know, we don't have to make a trip to the Humane Society. We can go back and get wasted. But instead, we go outside, and the cat's curled up fucking shivering because it's getting cold out, And it broke our hearts, so we took her to the Humane Society, and now it looks like we might end up getting a cat. It won't be in my house, it'll be in hers, but my dilemma is this. Cats have really sharp claws, and I hate them. I hate it when a cat jumps on you, and if it, sometimes it'll like just be stretching or whatever the case may be, and it will dig its claw into your thigh. It is the worst feeling in the world. It gives me shivers in my spine. I can't stand it. And it makes me want to punch a cat. Let me also preface this by saying I'm not a cat person by any means. Cats are cute, don't get me wrong. When I was staying with you and Amber, when Katie and I were out there, I loved, you know, Luna was cool. Vince was cool. It was fine hanging out with the cats. They're cute. Cats are cute. I'm not going to say they're not. My preference, though, is dogs. And so, you know, it's never really crossed my mind to own a cat. And while I know I can take care of a cat, the major issue with me with cats is their fucking claws. I hate them. I don't like their claws. So the question is, when does it become... when is it selfish, and is it just me being inhumane, you know, because case in point, I want this cat fucking declawed. I don't want to deal with scratching my arm or my face. I don't want it to rip up my girlfriend's hardwood floors. I don't want her to come home and she's got a really nice antique looking couch. I don't want it ripped up. I want this cat to have a minimal amount of capability of destruction at this point. And most of all, I don't want my meaty thigh to be gored by this cat as it goes to jump off me at any moment, because the minute it happens, I'll kick it. No, I won't kick it, but I'll get pissed enough to want to kick it, and that's enough for me to really get, you know, to really seriously think about declawing. So I guess I know you own two cats. And I know that there's a whole core group of people out there who say it is inhumane, it strips a cat of its feral, you know, its primal instinct to, you know, if it finds a mouse, kill it, you know, not to mention the pain that might be caused by the actual procedure. So, you throw in your two cents, I've got some documentation here also, and we can figure out the declawing debate here together on this, Justin. Tanner.
Before I had cats, I always assumed that I would declaw any cat that I got because I didn't really know anything about it. I figured it was just, you know, a simple procedure. You know, I didn't think it was anything serious. And then when we were shopping around for cats and stuff, I started learning about it and seeing that, you know, every Humane Society we went to, they would ask us, you know, are you going to declaw this cat? And my girlfriend, sort of being an animal lover, said no, but I was just thinking, like, well, you know, what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. So then I came home and I read up on it. I was just like, you know, I saw how it was, you know, the removal of portions of bone and how painful recovery was and that sort of thing. And also the fact that I knew we were considering getting other cats in the future, and you never want to have a declawed cat and a clawed cat because then they're completely defenseless and, mm-hmm. you know, and can't sort of compete in that sort of sphere of dominance within a house. So we just ended up getting clawed cats, one from a Humane Society, one as a stray. And, you know, we really never had any problem with it. They never scratch us, period. I mean, it just doesn't happen. I don't know, maybe if you were playing with tiger cubs or panthers or something, because I don't think either of my cats have ever scratched me other than when they've been frightened when I pick them up or something like that, because they always keep their claws retracted. The only problem with claws is definitely the destruction of furniture, which my one cat doesn't scratch anything, period. And then my one, who was a stray, who probably lived outside for a few months, you know, has sort of a different environmental, you know, understanding, so he scratches our couch. But it just got to the point where, I mean, you either love the animal or you love your material things, and I don't really care about the couch, you know. It doesn't really bother me.
See, I love my material things when it comes to cats, because... Here's my stance on this cat right now. The cat's cute as hell. Yeah, I might become slightly attached to it, but in all honesty, thinking about it now. Now, this is obviously very premature because I've only known the cat for about a grand total of 5 hours. But if the cat one day accidentally ran out the back door and became a stray again, I wouldn't think to myself, oh man, that cat's gone for good. I'd be like, alright, that cat's gone for good. Time, I guess, to maybe get a new one or look at a dog, finally. You know what I mean? I'm not attached to cats. Now, that's not to say that once the cat starts finding me, you know, or gets more fond of me and shows me some sort of, you know, affection, that I won't get an attachment. But as it stands right now, I just don't want a cat that's going to ruin any property, especially one that, like, I mean, I wasn't out looking for a cat. This cat just kind of came to us. So this cat's got to follow my rules now. That's the way it works.
Well, yeah, but I mean, once you get the cat, and you see that cats have far more dynamic personalities than dogs do.
No.
They do. And they absolutely do. They have... Dogs have loyal personalities. They're different deviations from the loyal personality, but they're all essentially the same sort of thing because they're pack animals. Mm-hmm. So they treat all the family unit is always as a pack. Where cats, I mean, it's a lot. There's a much different variance I see, at least in our cats and cats I've come in contact with. So I mean, you have that bond with a dog in terms of the loyalty. I mean, with a dog, I mean, you really feel like. There's a huge bond there because you're both in the same pack.
Mm-hmm.
But with cats, it's a different sort of bond in that you really, really get to know a cat and the nuances of its personality. So when we first got Vince, who this one who scratches our couch, we got him as a stray. I would have had the same attitude as you, where, you know, if he's scratching the couch, I'm going to be super fucking pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it started. But, you know, now that it's sort of gone on, it's just like, you know, that's part of his personality, that's his thing, and I care about him more than the couch. It's just been juxtaposed. It sort of flips itself over, and you start to realize, like, you know, next time I just won't get a nice couch, because all I've right. got this cat. You know, I value the cat more than the couch.
Well, all right, well, this cat, named tentatively Murgatroyd, This cat is it's really a cute cat. Well, I'll get attached to it at some point. It's not going to live at my house either. My house will never see a cat because this cat in particular, maybe it's because it was upset or it was just a certain time in its coat's, you know, shedding stage, but it was shedding a lot and I really don't want to deal with the cleanup. My girlfriend has hardwood floors. I have a lot of carpet and I'm not going to deal with it here. But you know, I'm sure I'll get attached to it at some point if we end up getting this cat. There are pluses and minuses to a cat. The one big plus is obviously the dependency issue. And, you know, for someone like me, where I'm gone, like today, I was at work for 11 hours, you know. If I had a dog, I can only imagine it being a dog that loves being in a cage for 10 hours of its day. And then I come home and I can take it for a walk or two. But, you know, that's a lot of commitment. Whereas if I did have a cat, I know for a fact I could leave it at home. I'll set out the litter box. I set out my kitten chow or whatever the fuck it is. And they'll take care of themselves. And I like that aspect of it. But when it comes to the claws, see, they can prance around my house all they want. But that couch cost me more than that fucking cat did. And I want to be able to resell that or keep it for a long time. And I don't want that couch to get ruined. That's my thing. I mean, monetarily, and I hate looking at things monetarily because my affection for the cat is certainly going to probably grow, like I said, but that couch costs me a lot of money, and if that cat rips any part of it, that cat isn't allowed in my house anymore. And do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, I understand it's kind of... It's really a shit thing to do to put a value on what's greater, like a life form or an inanimate object. But I'm not looking to own a cat. It's just that this cat needs a home, and no one else was willing to give it to it. And I'm willing to fuck it up and help my girlfriend out. But when it comes to that couch, that thing cost me a lot of money. It's hundreds of dollars. This cat's going to cost us $65.
Now, when all's said and done, not after shots and
no,
vet visits and
for a stray, the Humane Society here in Detroit, $65 out the door. You get shots, any all checkups and everything like that. They do it all for you.
Well, that's the deal we had too. But I mean, you have there's a whole slew of shots you've got to go through.
Yeah,
they only give you your first shots.
Her roommate's going to do all that because her roommate's.
You have way more.
Her roommate's the one who like became. I mean, I love a roommate and all, but she kind of was like, it was funny because it was like Katie and I were the parents in this situation, and she was the little kid, and she's like, "Can we have him, please? Can we keep him?" And Katie and I were very, very much like, you know what, we're not going to deal with it. This is your cat, not ours. But at the same time, I'm going to be living with it, and you know, it's going to end up inherently be mine at some point. And that's why I just want to. That's why, you know, with the clawing, I just want to make sure. If I don't do it, I want to make sure I'm not getting myself into a shitload of trouble with it. Now, okay, we've talked about our own personal feelings on this, and really quickly before we end this topic, I did want to kind of chime in with what some of the more important organizations in the country say regarding declawing. For instance, the Humane Society of the U.S. is against it. Their statement, it says directly, the Humane Society of the U.S., the United States, opposes declawing of cats when done solely for the convenience of the owner, which would be what I want to do, and without benefit to the animal. Further, we oppose any other unnecessary surgical procedure that is painful, distressful, or restrictive of the function of the body part involved when done for cosmetic purposes or to disguise natural imperfections of any animal. So that's a pretty big blanket statement regarding any sort of surgery on an animal. And I agree with it to an extent, but this cat is not going to be an outside cat indoors at all times, no matter what. So it's never going to have the need to paw at anything lest there be a rat or a mouse in the house. The Cat Fanciers Association states, "The Cat Fanciers Association recognizes that scratching is a natural behavior of cats, and that cats may be defenseless without full use of their claws if they either intentionally or unintentionally go outdoors. CFA perceives the declawing of cats and the severing of digital tendons to be elective surgical procedures that are without benefit to the cat. Because of the discomfort associated with any surgery and potential future behavioral or physical effects, CFA disapproves of routine declawing in lieu of alternative solutions to prevent household damage." The American Veterinary Medical Association, it says it should be considered only after attempts have been made to prevent the cat from using its claws. So basically, if you couldn't train it to do it, then maybe that's an option, but otherwise, no. And then this Animal Hospital Association. So most accredited places say it's a last-ditch effort or it's don't ever do it at all. Mm-hmm. I say do it. I am not a cat, and the cat is an animal to be domesticated into my home. Try and talk me out of it, Tanner. Come on.
Well, it's like getting a puppy and saying the puppy's biting me all the time, so I'm just going to remove its teeth and feed it soft food for the rest of its life.
I'm four square for that.
I mean, to me, it's just either you get a cat with claws or you just don't get a cat. I mean, you've got to make your priority. Is my priority my couch or is my priority having, you know, a companion? That's the way
I
see it.
If I wanted a companion, I'd get a dog. God damn this cat for even coming into my life.
Then don't adopt it, you know?
Yeah, but it's so cute, and it's not going to get adopted. That's the thing. It won't get adopted.
And there's always a very good chance that it won't be a scratcher, you know? But you don't really know that until you get it in your house.
Well, tell me if this is... Because you own cats, and again, we're taking too long on this, but tell me if this is a sign of a scratcher. When he was at our... He was in, like, this little area before you get into my girlfriend's apartment, and they have this carpet out there where you wipe your feet. And the cat, after it would do its rounds of nuzzling its face into my legs, it would go up to the carpet, and it would stretch, and then it would hook its claws into one end of the carpet, stretch further, and then start pawing at the carpet, like, with its claws. Is that the sign of a scratcher?
Well, even my non-scratcher cat scratches the carpet. I mean, the issue is it going to scratch furniture?
Yeah. Well, I'll
scratch. That's hard to tell unless you get it in the house.
Does squirting water help it?
We tried that with Vince, and he turned it into a game where, because he likes being chased and like being under threat of danger and having to elude. So he figured out, you know, if he scratches the couch, I would yell at him and chase him or squirt him. So he did it as fun. Like, okay, I'm putting my claws in the couch. What are you going to do about it? You know, and then I would chase him, and he enjoyed it. So that didn't help at all.
See, now, when you describe it that way, that's fucking cool. That's a cat.
Yeah, but he still ruined, you know, a really expensive couch. I mean, it is ruined. It's beyond the point of reselling. We're going to have to probably cover it up. But, I mean, it's like the couch is still functional. We just got to get a slip cover now. That's the way I look at it.
All right. All right, well, that ends cats. Next
we're
topic.
Done. I don't want to edit anymore. It's at 35 right. minutes.
God damn, we only got done with two topics. All right, so we're going to push Guitar Hero back one more week.
And my secret topic.
Can you just give me, like, three keywords?
No. That would give it away.
What? Give me one key.
It's really not that exciting anyway. It's just a topic I haven't really discussed.
Is it?
It's about TV. No.
What is it then?
It's about TV. Some aspect of it.
How there's no nudity and there needs to be?
There's nudity. Every night on Skinamax. Like, bedroom stories, Kama Sutra.
Is David Duchovny reprising his role in
Red Shoe Diaries? worst porn ever.
Yeah, it was. Any porn on Skinamax is bad porn by my standards now that I'm older. I realize the errors of my ways.
Everyone's weaned on it, though.
Yeah, that's where it all it starts in there. That shows everything you'd want to see, but then you're like, I need it live. And then you go to Skinamax thinking, well, it's the next best thing. You know, and then all of a sudden you get all access, and you're like, whoa, wait a second. Wait a second. I'm missing out on. Anyway. So, I guess next week we'll talk about your secret topic, which is nudity and or something. Whatever it is. All right.
Done.
Say bye. Who's to say, maybe one day you could wake up from this daze, realize I slipped away.
You have been listening to This Just In, recorded and distributed on Monday, September 11th, 2006. For more information about this podcast as well as other projects, please visit www.the-means.com. Sick of thinking about how to